I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
DMV, it's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century from I Love Lucy to News Radio. I am your TV guide, Brett White, and this week I am joined by the host of the Fuzzy Typewriter podcast, Mr. Paul Montgomery. Hello, Paul.
Hey, Brett, this is wild. This is a great set you've got here.
Yeah.
It's too bad nobody can see it because this is an audio podcast, but you put a lot of work into this.
No, it's a recreation of the first match game set, the 72 to 78 set, I do believe. The one that looks a lot more like a weird orange Planet of the Apes backdrop with like weird fake rock looking stuff.
Not the one with the Seussical a little bit.
It's not the one that looks like a Confederate flag.
Yes.
Just what the second
I'm
one
glad
like.
I'm not the only one who noticed that about it. Yeah, you see a lot of screen caps of Match Game.
Yeah.
This is a very relatable anecdote for a lot of people out there listening, but maybe for listeners of this show. But yeah, it totally looks like the Confederate flag, and it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah. But this week we're not talking about anything uncomfortable. This week we are traveling to September 25th, 1979. Apocalypse Now ruled the box office. My Sharona by the Knack topped the charts, and Taxi aired Reverend Jim, A Space Odyssey. Paul, you must have seen Reverend Jim, A Space Odyssey before.
Not when it first aired. I did not exist.
Neither of us existed.
But I have seen it many a time, and this is a classic episode, not just of Taxi, but of sitcoms in general. So I'm very honored to get to talk about this, which is a showpiece for one of my favorite sitcom characters of all time.
Right on. Yeah. I mean, is Taxi your favorite sitcom?
I would say Cheers is probably my favorite overall sitcom, but I have a lot of love for Taxi. I think it's a bit of an underdog, and that makes sense because it's about underdogs.
Yeah, really.
but I do think it deserves more cred than it gets. It's a really cool show, very funny, but also a great strain of melancholy that runs throughout. It actually is a very sad kind of show sometimes, and I like the audaciousness of that
right.
It allows things to be dirty and grimy, and it's kind of the anti-Friends in a way. I won't say anti-Seinfeld. Seinfeld feels very polished, but they're awful people,
right? These are good people where bad things happen to them, or Taxi is.
Yeah, these are good, or at least well-meaning, big-hearted people for the most part. Maybe not Louis, but
definitely not.
They're a bunch of ragamuffins, and I love them.
Where did you first see Taxi?
Oh, gosh. I guess it must have been on Nick at Night.
Yes, yeah, that's me.
But, I mean, we were those kids who were obsessed with Nick at Night. I had the book that had just, like, the complete episode guide to all the different shows, like
Ooh.
Welcome Back, Kotter and I Love Lucy. And that book was very well loved and read.
And I'm jealous.
I miss having that book.
It's on eBay because I've run across it because I was doing a hunt for TV or Nick at Night enamel pins.
Sure.
Because they did make some. I think there is a Mary Tyler Moore one that's really cool, but it was like way too expensive and I didn't buy it.
Well, you pointed me to my Cheers pin. You got the better one, but I got a really good Cheers lapel pin.
And it's from the 80s too, right?
I think so.
Yeah, because I assume mine's a beer stein with the Cheers logo in it.
Yeah, mine's probably, maybe it could be the early 90s. I'm not sure. I'm not sure on the pedigree of it, but it was probably from one of those pop-up Cheers, like Cheers Alike bars yeah. that they had back then based on the popularity of Cheers. But yeah, I love Nick at Night. And so back then, things like this and Welcome Back, Kotter, I loved how grimy they were.
Definitely.
It just had a very different feeling than anything that was on TV at the time. And amazing if you love characters and ensembles, and just really interesting character dynamics. And if you get, you know, multiple seasons out of it, you have these great combinations of different personalities. And we're going to see a lot of that in this episode.
Definitely. Yeah. I also came to Taxi through Nick at Night, which I think it's definitely the gateway, the portal through which our generation fell, which I think is very fascinating because we grew up very aware of history because of that. Like in addition to intaking new, like Clarissa Explains It All and Friends and other new stuff, you're also taking in I Love Lucy and Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore and Taxi and Cheers, like all simultaneously. So you're getting an interesting cross section of television across the decades.
And even if you take the full spectrum of Nickelodeon, even during the daytime, we got like classic Looney Tunes and stuff, which, you know, there's so much more choice now. Back then, you would, you know, watch Looney Tunes, even if it was like a really uncomfortable Speedy Gonzales episode you know, not some of your favorite characters. Like, oh, great, it's one of the old Porky Pig ones. Those are weird. Or like the ones where Daffy Duck is actually Daffy and not just an asshole.
Right.
Like,
or the ones that are like, here's how to live life in the 50s, which I always loved those. Like, here's what the wife does while her husband's, you know, away at work. And it's her going to like the bank and getting a rolling pin and stuff like that. And it's weird that we grew up being also taught about things that were like anachronisms by the time
through that very interesting lens, you know, of like very, very warped and stuff. And I just remember even back then they had like stuff like Animaniacs and stuff, which is a little bit later, but like being able to understand references or kind of half understand,
like Lon Chaney and things,
exactly, or like, you know, when they bring in really scrawny Frank Sinatra, into those old like Looney Tunes or whatever, and everybody starts fawning in the audience, and you get the Bobby Soxers and stuff, and like I was, you know, like 10 or 11 years old, and I knew what a Bobby Soxer was,
yeah.
And like that's, you know,
kids these days don't understand. But yeah, this week. This week on Must Have Seen TV, we are talking about the Taxi episode Reverend Jim, A Space Odyssey. This is the third episode of season 2. It was written by Glenn and Les Charles and directed by James Burrows. And here is how Wikipedia describes the episode. The cabbies meet Reverend Jim at a restaurant and get him a job as a cab driver. Jim then spreads his special brand of reality around the garage. Paul, is that accurate?
That's pretty much what happens. Maybe not in that order.
His special brand of magic.
Special brand of magic. Reverend Jim is magic.
Yeah, definitely. I did want to bring up that I had to go to, usually for this, I try and find like the Netflix description or the Hulu description or the iTunes description or like push comes to shove the description in the DVD box. For this, I had to go to Wikipedia because while Taxi is streaming on Hulu and CBS All Access, only about like 70 episodes of the 110 or so episode run are available. And it's not just like, you know, the first 3 seasons are there and nothing else. It's just a Swiss cheese collection. And for some reason, this one, the definitive episode of Taxi, one of the greatest episodes of sitcom of all time, isn't included. Which is a shame.
It is.
Damn shame. So that's my gripe against whoever is holding their Taxi episodes hostage for them. I guess for them sweet DVD box set money, which I had to pony up for so I could watch every episode.
I already owned the box set. I had to go dig in for season 2. For some reason, that wasn't with the other ones, but I did find it. Here's the IMDb description.
Ooh.
Which is even more shoehorned. The guys run into Reverend Jim and try to get him a job, but first they have to convince Louis to hire him and help him pass the exam.
Okay, that's more information.
Pretty succinct. The less magic, but the magic should be implied because it says quite clearly Reverend Jim in this first sentence.
Yeah, so this episode is the one where Christopher Lloyd joins the cast full time. There was a bit of a cast shakeup after season 1. because Randall Carver, who played, what was his name? For some reason, I can remember the actor's name, but not the character.
He's super forgettable.
Yeah, that's
he's like the kind of Doctor Who villain where when you turn around, you forget that you even saw them in the first place.
Right. Petey? No. I don't know. Randall
Alex?
Carver.
No, that's Judd Hirsch. No, yeah. Jeff. Maybe it's Jeff.
Oh, it might be Jeff. We'll just call him Jeff is the guy that's in Louis Cage with him.
That's true.
Okay.
Who also appears on an episode of Cheers.
Okay, I'm Googling Randall Carver taxi.
Do you remember when Jeff appears on Cheers, though?
No.
It's the Halloween episode.
He played John Burns.
John Burns.
Jeez, I should know that because it's so close to one of my favorite artists of all time, John Byrne. What's my problem? He was on the Halloween episode, the one where Cliff gets a date?
Yeah.
Oh, that one breaks my heart, and I'm obviously paying attention to Cliff in that episode. Taxi undergoes a cast change. After season one, John Burns just disappears. He joins the episode, like him and Elaine Nardo, played by Mary Lou Henner, are the entry point characters in the pilot episode. Like, they both become taxi drivers there.
Yeah, they're basically like little orphans who've come to New York.
Right.
And the problem with John's character is that Alex is already there.
Right.
Alex is the most, you know, milquetoast, like every man that you can get, and is really likable.
Right.
The only thing that sort of distinguishes John is that he's boring and milquetoast, but he's also like super innocent.
Yeah.
But then they also throw in this idea that he takes big risks.
Right. That's the thing that I noticed when I was rewatching it, of like, if I was the showrunner of Taxi or on the writing staff, I'd be like, that's his character game. Like, he's not the straight man. He's the guy that will be like changing his hairstyle every week to match, you know, a person he picked up in his cab, or he'll be joining different cults, you know, random points of the season. Like, there's so many things he could have done, because he gets a job as a taxi driver after just like getting stuck in the dispatcher's garage. And then he like spur of the moment gets married midway through the season.
Right.
Like, that's his character. And it seems like they never latched onto that, because that's a fun game to play that they just never got.
Yeah, and sort of I think the what probably took them by surprise was, Lotka wasn't just a curiosity, but was also really kind of sweet and innocent.
Right.
And this was something that I sort of jotted down that I wanted to talk about with Reverend Jim coming in, is that I do see there's a definite distinction between Jim and Lotka, even though they're both kind of oddball characters. Mm-hmm. I think Reverend Jim is actually a much sweeter character, even if he is a burnout and not as, you know, bubbly and cute as Lotka is. But if you actually boil down Lotka, there's some kind of sinister stuff going on there, because he's not as innocent as he lets on, and he can be kind of lecherous and and cruel.
He's
in,
only
in
sweet
some ways.
Because he doesn't speak the language in a way. Like he,
right.
And also because the language. Wait, what country is he from?
He's from the old country.
Oh, did they never name it? Oh, but like his language is just cute. I mean, it's just like ebi dat. Like, it's so like baby talk.
Right.
So of course he's like sweet and adorable, is because he's always talking that way. But what's funny is, like, you know, this episode is the introduction to Reverend Jim, except we did meet him in season one, because he's Reverend Jim, because he's the reverend they get to arrange, like, Lotka's green card marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, this episode is so fascinating, because it's truly, more so than maybe any other show I've ever seen, it's really an introduction to the show. It's very much like, they like bring this character in, they remind you who he is, and then they kind of like handhold you, and they like went to every home watching and was like, hi, this is Jim, he's on the show now. Like, it's
it's like, very much a show and tell kind of episode where they like they basically they feed him, you know, lines that he can, you know, retort, and it's He's a crosstalk joke machine, and that's one of the reasons it's a really funny episode, is because he just very flatly can give you, you know, a one-liner or the, you know, the layup on a yeah. joke that, you know, Elaine tosses him, or, you know, or Bobby, or whatever. And there's so many great exchanges in this just like 22 minutes or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's he is also such a great addition to the cast. I'd like to start off, we should go through who is in this cast, because it is maybe, I mean, I would say like this and News Radio are two of the most, you know, character, like actor for actor, heavy hitter, heavy shows of all time. Taxi's mm-hmm. definitely, like, you know, Judd Hirsch is the lead. Judd Hirsch is in a sitcom now. Like, mm-hmm. he's on Superior Donuts at the age of, like, in his mid-80s, and is still basically the exact same as he was 40 years ago.
It's fantastic. He's so natural.
Yeah. Second build, which I noticed, is Jeff Conaway, mm-hmm. who was coming off of Being in Grease, which yep. was a huge movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's playing Bobby Wheeler, an actor. Then after that, you have Mary Lou Henner playing Elaine Nardo, who goes on to be in Evening Shade, which I like always bringing up as a obscure yeah. 90s sitcom, but it lasted four seasons.
My dad was a huge Evening Shade fan, so we had a lot of VHS tapes of Cheers and Evening Shade.
Well,
and
like, store-bought or homemade?
Homemade.
Right. Oh, nice.
Taped off the TV. So some of them had like the commercials in it. Some of them he remembered to hit pause between, you know, commercial breaks and stuff. But, you know, Nub with the wagon.
Evening oh, yeah.
Shade, man. Ponder.
Good stuff.
some great characters.
Also on this show is
Charles Durning.
Tony Danza playing Tony Banta,
mm-hmm.
who is, I mean, the same character. But, like, Tony Danza went on to play, you know, who's the boss? He's Tony Danza. Like, you know, he's in Don Juan. He's Joseph Gordon-Levitt's dad. This is the most recent place I've seen Tony Danza.
he's an amateur boxer. And, again, we've mentioned that it's so sort of grimy and everybody's kind of an underdog. Like, in this series, he's, you know, a boxer and he wins some fights and stuff. And that's even partially the intro to this episode, is yeah. they're coming back from a victory. His opponent actually tripped on the ropes getting in and knocked himself out. And so Tony won by default. But he's basically playing like, a second rate Rocky.
Yeah.
And if you think of, you know, Rocky as the ultimate underdog, think of under him, like an underdog under Rocky. Because in this series, he actually finds out that he's not really that talented a boxer and he has to stop.
Yeah.
And figure out, like, oh, what's, you know, my life really about?
Same thing also kind of happens to Jeff Conaway's, but to Bobby Wheeler when he leaves the show, like, to go be on a soap opera, but then, like, loses his job before he moves or whatever.
Yep.
This show is filled with people, like, who are there, like, just working as taxi drivers while they fulfill their dream, and their dream keeps being like, you're a taxi driver, which is sad.
Yeah, and so Mary Lou Henner's character, Elaine Nardo, one of the great, Elaine O'Connor Nardo, one of the great character names, is an art dealer, or she wants to be in the fine art world.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of episodes centered around that, her trying to impress her boss, things like that. The shades of sort of Rebecca from Cheers, but maybe not as bloodthirsty as
and
Rebecca.
And also like a lot more likable and confident. I don't like Rebecca from Cheers. I'll definitely Then there's also Danny DeVito as Louis De Palma. Basically, I mean, like, this is the Danny DeVito-iest role.
Yeah.
Up until, I mean, like, the crazy thing I realize is he has now played Frank Reynolds on It's Always Sunny for more episodes than he was in Taxi.
Sure. Yeah.
Which blows my mind that now Taxi is his second longest running show. But also the fact that he's had two shows where he's played the same character for over 110 episodes.
But I mean, anytime I see someone with, you know, like a gray vest over a pink shirt.
Right.
Like, it's just, it's the perfect costume.
And it's such a costume too. Like,
it's basically a cartoon character because yeah. he wears the same thing pretty much 100% of the time. Unless he's like naked or something or in his underwear or whatever.
Which and I just got the flash of that It's Always Sunny episode where he births himself out of a leather couch naked.
Yes.
Anyway. Yes. Then there's also Andy Kaufman as Latka Gravis. And I tweeted a while ago about how I've never seen a show bend over backwards to accommodate a performer as much as Taxi does with Andy Kaufman. Totally makes sense because he was like one of the most popular comedians at the time that this started. And, you know, underground sensation, avant-garde. It's when you look at his other career moves of like pissing off wrestlers as part of a larger scheme or whatever, singing Mighty Mouse, but only lip-syncing the chorus during SNL. It's weird to be like, oh, and he also was a sitcom character. But they only got him for like 16 episodes a season. That was part of his contract. And he would do like more if, you know, he felt like it or if they needed him to. Like it wasn't, I don't think it was contentious, but it's still like he was never contracted to be like in every episode, which
he's like the Charlie Sheen of his day, but much more talented and avant-garde.
Likeable, and then also the fact that, you know, in season four, when I guess Andy Kaufman was like just getting an itch, they're like, oh, okay, look, and now it's a multiple personality disorder. And he just like starts playing all these different characters. And my friend Pat Baer pointed out online that the only other time this has happened is like on Family Matters when Jaleel White was like, I want to start playing, you know, cool characters. And they invented Stefan Urkel, which I think this is the only thing that Jaleel White and Andy Kaufman have in common.
That sounds about right.
I don't know. That's my, and he's great. Of course, like, yeah, bend over backwards to accommodate him because he's great and he brings a really kooky vibe to the show.
Yeah, the only you know, modern day comparison that I could think of, and it's probably not an ego thing, it's totally a story thing, is Tom Cavanaugh on The Flash, because you know, he gets to play a different character basically every season, and sometimes multiple characters per season, and that's based on the, you know, multiverse idea of it. But and that's I love that stuff. Here it definitely feels more indulgent, and it feels like this is where we need to pacify this guy and keep him interested and entertained.
It does go away in season five. Like once they marry him, once Carol Kane comes on in season five or into four full time, that all kind of goes away. And I wonder if it's because like, oh, cool, now I have like another person doing my character. Like we have scenes together. We have actual meat in our stories. Like,
right.
And Carol Kane is amazing, and she,
I mean, can you imagine anyone else, you know, larger than life enough, you know, to play? And for anyone who's confused, we did mention that Laka gets married in the previous season, but that's that's a one-off just so we can get his green card, and so that's not Simca comes later,
right? And then marrying them, joining the cast in this episode, is Jim Ignatowski, Reverend Jim, the Space Odyssey himself, Christopher fucking Lloyd, on a show.
5 years before Back to the Future.
Yeah. Is this
just 5 years?
This is one of his first things, I would say.
I mean, it's also always been weird to me that he does this and then he goes on to do that little bit part in Cheers.
Right. It's also, it's crazy.
And is so unlikable in that role where he's so likable here.
He's also a fascinating person because he is, we were both born in 84, right? Yeah.
That's right.
Yep. So like people our age, he is such an integral part of our childhoods as Jim Ignatowski on Taxi on Nick at Night and then Back to the Future, which those VHS tapes I wore out as a kid, and then also Uncle Fester, like
Uncle Fester, who framed Roger Rabbit.
Clue, like I can't think of many actors that have that are as big a deal as he is, but you don't think of that often.
Or what for other some, what other regular role did he have on a sitcom? Can you think of one?
I don't think he ever did. Did he?
Yep.
Wait, what?
Pamela Anderson's Stacked about working at a bookstore,
which was in like the mid '90s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think I did watch that. That's,
which my dad owns on DVD.
So this is, you would never put Andy Kaufman and Jaleel White together, and you would never put Christopher Lloyd and Pamela Anderson together, but yet, here we are.
There you go. That's what happens in the 90s.
So this episode starts out, like we said, with them going into their like regular hangout bar, which is why I wanted to bring up like this is kind of a proto Cheers. Like it's
sure. Mario's.
Yeah, bar the Taxi creators, Glenn and Les Charles, wrote this episode. I think they were also co-creators of Taxi. Got their start as writers on the Bob Newhart show. Lineage. And this episode was directed by James Burrows, who was also like the Cheers director. So it's interesting to see, like, to watch this and compare the two shows, which can you, like, what would you,
sure,
how would you compare them?
I mean, it's found family. It's one of my favorite themes. It's what links so many of the things that I love, is just oddballs coming together and sometimes, you know, pinballing back and forth and not getting along. But in the end, they come together and have this special bond. Cheers is these schlubs showing up at this place, sort of like washing up on this desert island, because nowhere else would accept them, or they don't feel accepted anywhere else. And this is that, but as a job. So, I mean, one is basically an after work show. For some of them, it is their job, of course, the bartenders at Cheers. But then for Taxi, this is where they work, but they never feel, unless you're Alex.
Yeah.
No one really accepts that this is their career, that this is their vocation. This is just something that they're doing in between gigs. And I love all of it. You know, it's such a time capsule, because you get Bobby picking up the phone. I mean, there's pay phones for one thing, but then also like calling his answering service.
Right.
Like to see if he's got any messages. You know, and like all the stuff with green cards and, I don't know. This episode also doesn't explain how Jim gets his driver's license, except to say that like the standards aren't there, and they really do kind of fudge their way through him getting accepted. You know, he doesn't have a job interview really. He just gets Louis stoned by accident,
which because we need Christopher Lloyd to join this show, so by hook or by crook we're making it happen. So yeah,
I'm fine with,
of course,
because I don't need the machinations of it. This isn't as much as I love Frasier. That stuff works there. Frasier is all about machinations and getting and all the like. When I think about Frasier, I think about like a hallway with a bunch of doors,
right?
And then people going into either door. And I mean, they've had episodes like that, like the one where they go to the cabin, where people go into the wrong room or whatever. And it's all about misunderstandings, whereas Taxi is kind of a lot more easygoing.
Yeah, this episode's flow is very interesting, too, because it's just three scenes. The first scene is them just at
pretty
the bar.
Much.
and that's where they like see Jim. They have to reintroduce themselves to Jim multiple times. And then you get kind of a monologue from Jim. He says that he is the...
I am the living embodiment of the 60s.
Exactly what he is. Like, he like says it. Like, it's one of the first things he says in this episode. And it's like, yeah, that's him.
And then this, I don't remember exactly what figure they use in the script, but looking it up afterwards, just remind myself, I think there were 400,000 people that supposedly were at Woodstock. And so, like, the joke is sort of like...
500,000 people. Hey, you know... If I hadn't been there, there'd only have been 400,999 people. Lucky thing for them, I went.
That sums up Jim really well, is that he's fine just being one amongst the crowd.
And he also...
He's a very spectacular person, and everyone knows he's so special and celebrates him. That's why they kind of want... to get him this job and stuff. It's not just that they feel pity for him, but they also realize that there's something really special about this guy. And he's kind of like this puppy that they want, you know, like, can we keep him? And so there's a little bit of that, but then also there's this, I don't know, this like emergence quality to Jim where it's like, I'm part of the cosmos. And even if that makes me really, really small, like even if I'm just a tiny part of this,
he's so happy.
He celebrates that because that's everything. I make up part of this. I contribute to that.
One of the best moments, I think, like, this episode is filled with so many definitive moments that we're going to get to, but I think, for me, the definitive moment that really nails who Jim is as a character and shows you why he is special and also is, like, really powerful is when he's like, I even protested that crummy war.
I marched and protested against that crummy war.
Is that so?
Pardon me?
Hey, Tony.
No, I got something to say, Alex. You know, the only reason why guys like you got to stay home, protest, and get loaded, because guys like me were over in Nam doing your fighting for you. What do you say to that?
Thank you.
And it isn't sarcasm. It isn't snarky. It is
just
so
simple, like
simple, straightforward, and genuine. Of like, thank you. That's what I say. Like,
yeah,
I protest,
it's very,
but also thank you.
Very straightforward and casual without being flippant.
Right.
It's just, yeah, thank you.
And it's so direct too. And it immediately calms Tony down, because you know, like, he's had this argument before. He's gotten, you know, Vietnam vets did not have it easy when they came back. So you know, yeah, that this is something, you know, Alex has probably seen him do this a bunch of times before too. And so to, you know, you think like Jim might be the first person that's actually said like, thank you to him,
mm-hmm,
after getting yelled at.
It's great watching Tony throughout this episode, because even when they get to, you know, when they get to the Sunshine Cab Company and when they get to the DMV, he's still kind of like, this is stupid. Like,
yeah,
why are we doing this? But then, like, and part of this is breaking the fourth wall a little bit, because the actors got each other laughing on,
yeah,
the set.
He is 100% just laughing blatantly.
He's
in
just
the D&D.
Laughing like that. That is,
which is both,
you know,
in character.
That's Tony Danza and, you know,
but
Tony
also
Banta,
Tony Banta
laughing at the same time. But like, Jim wins him over. But that's one of the things I love about the chemistry about this. As simple as this is, and as much as it's basically just a showcase for the Reverend Jim character and for Christopher Lloyd as an actor, I think they do a lot of interesting character things, like that moment you were talking about with Alex trying to calm Tony down. Like, he's the ultimate, like, go-between. He just wants everybody to get along. He's a very reluctantly sort of the diplomat of the group.
Yeah.
He's able to talk to just about anybody, and he's the most articulate of them. Even though he's very much resigned himself to just, I'm a cab driver. That's who I am. That's everything about me. But you can also tell that there's maybe some wasted potential there, that he could maybe do, you know, bigger and better things, like, you know, bringing people together. But at least in this sort of microcosm, that's his role in this group of friends.
Right.
But I love that how they just rally around Jim and even Tony in the end. There are future episodes where there's a lot of great interplay between Jim and Louie, and we get a little tease of that.
Yeah,
with Moonlight Bay.
The second of three scenes in this episode,
mm-hmm,
takes place at the Sunshine Cab Company when they come back, and Louie's in the middle of like assigning out all the taxis, and that's, I guess, when he is like out for blood the most. Because he's, mm-hmm, like yelling at people like, if you're late again, you're out. Like, he's so angry. And they like, well, we have to, you know, get him on board with having Jim work here. And they look over, and Jim, while Louis's back is turned, is putting something in Louis's coffee. And he's like, it's either a Chiclet or a tranquilizer. I don't know. Turns out it's, mm-hmm, a tranquilizer. What do you make of Jim doing that? Because that's the one thing where I'm like, leads to great comedy, so maybe I shouldn't question it. But I'm also like, what is the motivation for Jim to put something in Louis's coffee?
You know, it's hard to say with Reverend Jim. Maybe he's confused. Maybe he thinks it's his coffee and he's going to have that later. He's lost in the moment. Reverend Jim exists on several different planes of existence.
This is an odyssey.
Is interdimensional, but you can also look at, I don't think it's mercenary in terms of, I'm going to get this guy, you know, stoned so he'll agree,
yeah,
to anything so he can be more, you know, pliant.
Jim
pliable.
Has no idea that's going on. Like, Jim,
yeah,
probably doesn't even remember that they're there to get him a job.
Yeah, if anything, he's like, this guy could stand to relax a little bit, and so I'm going to help him out a little bit by putting this in his coffee.
Right.
And that's as mercenary as it could possibly get. But it's more likely that he's just, I think this is my coffee. I'm used to putting things in other things.
It's a liquid. Things go in liquids.
Exactly.
One of the things that I noticed on my rewatch, because I rewatched all of season one really quickly, and the show wasn't clicking for me for like the first 18 or so episodes. And then I realized what happens. There's something around episode 18. There's a scene where Alex gets mad at Louie and then like chases him throughout the garage and like picks,
yes,
him up and like hooks him onto something. and like they hoist him up. And that was like, oh, that's what this show is. That's what I've been missing. And that's what I know it's going to become, is Taxi is one of the great physical comedy shows of all time. Sure. And I don't think that it gets that recognition. And in this episode, when Danny DeVito has to play tranked out Louie, it comes alive for, you know, for Louie, for Danny DeVito. Like, he sells it so hard. The way that he falls asleep on the mic and like it like droops. And then when he goes out and performs Moonlight Bay, and then he like just walks on taxi cabs.
On Moonlight Bay, we could hear the voices sing. They seem to say, everybody sing.
It's all so well choreographed, and that the way they play with space on this show is so great. And so I'm glad that we got to talk about that.
This is a very Broadway sort of show.
Yeah.
They love, like, the characters love Broadway. Obviously, Bobby's trying to get into different things, like not just commercials and movies, but also into plays and things like that. You know, a lot like Joey, I guess, on Friends.
Right.
They're very similar characters, actually.
Well, it's like if Tony and Bobby Wheeler had a baby. Yes. It's Joey Tribbiani.
Exactly. That maybe that was the pitch, but that's spot on. But yeah, they constantly they're referencing, you know, Sondheim songs. There's a bit where, you know, Alex does a bit from Company, I believe, later on.
Yeah.
At Mario's.
Well, there's a full on Broadway number in like one of the dream
Broadway
sequences
numbers,
where they're like
they're
all in tuxedos and.
Yeah, and the one thing that's interesting, you know, the stuff with Louis on the cab, they make such great use of his size, but also his physicality. Now, obviously, you mentioned the bit where he births himself from the couch, you know, on It's Always Sunny, decades later. In a weird, weird way, Danny DeVito is this sort of trollish answer to Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah.
Like, for that body type.
Yeah.
Like, Dick Van Dyke is such he's one of the great physical comedians of all time, you know, up there with like Charlie Chaplin. Just what he's able to do, he's just rubber. And Louis isn't exactly flexible, but like the moment where he just like falls asleep on the cab and just like slumps down, the timing of that is perfect.
Even the way that he like saunters before he starts singing, when he like just saunters over to the cab and he's just like, luck, like, and the way he like leans on it, the way he like positions his body is so light and airy, which is so different from how he normally carries himself.
Yeah.
Which I think the energy also, Taxi's physicality is also how other actors aren't as like weirdly lithe as Danny DeVito, or like weirdly like graceful. This is one of the most aggressive shows physically. There are so many comedy scenes that's them like full out running. Or falling over. And it isn't like Dick Van Dyke trips and it's a ballet. You know, Jeff Conaway or Tony Danza or Judd Hirsch does it and it hurts. Like, it looks real and painful and sloppy. And that's a really, really specific Taxi thing.
There's a scene that I don't know if you've gotten to it you probably have at this point in your rewatch, but when Alex ends up in the gay bar.
Yes. Oh, God, yes.
Dancing, and this just giant man is just, like, dancing, and it's magical.
Giant like, John like, Good, like, John Goodman times two. Like, he's a big dude.
Big, tall guy with really tight pants dancing with Alex and...
twirling him around.
Judd Hirsch is basically like a rag doll, and... but it's wonderful disco stuff, and it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But it's... man, wild show from a physical perspective. And I mean, you look at the set, it's like, I love how modular it is too. They've got, you know, they've got a card table where they're playing cards. They've got benches. They can move the stuff. They've got, you know, the cars that they can pull out and, you know, do things with, you know, Laka working on a car.
It's one of the great sets. Like, when you make a multicam set, it needs to be able, we talked about this in the Seinfeld episode, how like that episode takes place mostly in just like Jerry's parents' Florida apartment. And it's like, how does it not feel that cramped? And it's like, well, because the couch is a set and the kitchen is a set. And like on Taxi, you have like, you know, where Lotko works on the taxis is a set. Louis' cage is a set. The area in front of the cage next to, like, the cigarette machines is a set. And then, like,
the stairs
stage
up to the
center.
Office, you know, where the boss that we never see
the phone.
Much works there. They've got a space in the back that they use as a bunker at one point.
Yeah. So that's how it like really breaks it up. It's a beautifully designed set. And the fact that there are like real cars in there also adds adds some price value to it.
And that reminds me, this episode, they pull the camera back, which is something that they do in Cheers every once in a while, and it's always really exciting when you see like that fourth wall at Cheers. Yeah. when they reverse the camera. You get to see like the bits of masking tape that are on the floor for the blocking, and I guess like usually the cameras are there.
Yeah.
But like they needed to pull back so they could do the bit with the cab going backwards out into the wall. I love how dirty it is. It doesn't feel like TV dirty. It feels like, my family, we own a garage, and it's a small family business, and we are not, a dealership where it's even then like there's some, oil spills on the floor and everything, but they try to keep it, pretty clean. But like this is a garage that is worked in every single day, and it's dirty. It's everything is coated with a layer of dust. When you go home, all of your clothes smell like motor oil.
Yeah.
So like that's what that set feels like to me.
I was thinking about how when I rewatch Friends, I'm like, oh, it'd be so much fun to work on the show because you could like hang out on the couch and it looks so comfy. And I was rewatching Taxi. You're watching Taxi, and I'm like, I would not want to hang out on this set, like outside of.
Like
when
I'd
I'm
do
shooting.
A set visit, like you can take some pictures and stuff because that would be cool. But I don't want to hang out here. I don't want to work here.
Because it has giant cars. Like it's definitely got to smell like a garage.
It reminds me of the Barney Miller set a bit, yeah. Which is also really kind of dirty and musty looking, and even just like the quality of light is just kind of gray in there, and it's not a fun place. But you've got these really colorful characters inhabiting it, and you're like this makes it kind of. Worthwhile to wake up every morning and go to work. At least you get to hang out with your friends.
Yeah. So like as Louis is falling asleep, Bobby goes up and is like, can Jim come work here? And he's like, yeah, sure. So then now we get scene 3 of 3. Well, I guess, and then there's a code at the end, but still like massive right. Scene 3 of 3, which is the driver's test scene, which is one of the most magical scenes of any show I've ever watched, because every time I watch it, I end up laughing involuntarily, uncontrollably.
Sure.
Even though I know it by heart now, and all the jokes now, like I can see them coming a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just something so pure about the joke, like when Jim is sitting down taking the test and it's, psst.
What does a yellow light mean? Slow down. Okay. What? Yellow light mean? Slow down. Okay. What?
So embarrassed. Bobby's like, slow down.
And then, what? And slower. And then they just keep repeating it over and over again. Mm-hmm. And usually by the third time, I'm having an out-of-body experience, and I'm looking down like, oh, I'm laughing so hard at this.
Thinking about the day of filming and like them laughing because, obviously like Mary Lou Henner and Tony Danza are just breaking character and laughing hysterically. I love the look on Bobby's face. He's just so uncomfortable.
The way he
he's
like puts
big,
his
lanky dude
leather jacket over his head to like hide himself. Mm-hmm. It's so great.
You're just like 2 yards away. You look at the woman who's sitting behind Jim, and she's like kind of annoyed. And and the look on Jim's face, like, can I say it slower? Like, I don't know if I can, like, I'll try.
It's such good. I noticed it this time. Like the look in Christopher Lloyd's eyes when he's like doing that third repeat of it. It's like Jim is having this weird existential crisis. Like there's a lot going on in his eyes there of just like, what? Like he's like trying to decipher like what is happening to me. It's so great. But even the bits before that, which is the most iconic moment of the episode, when he just gets the form and it's like eyes, and then Elaine has to stop him and be like, no, don't put two.
He doesn't know his last name. He's got to fill out the name part. He's like, well, what was your father's name?
Give me a little help on this one.
You forgot your last name?
I've been busy.
Well, what was your father's name? Ignatowski.
Well, maybe that's your name too.
Sounds right. So he like writes that down. The eyes, but like, what color are my eyes? And then having everybody and Elaine is like, well, we can rule out white. it's vaudeville. This is old New York comedy, as classic as it gets. This is the stuff that comedy writers love writing,
and actors love performing, and that's why it's so great. I love when he like he's exhausted and he like turns around and he like rubs his eyes. He's like, oh.
This is the most reading I've done in years. My brown eyes hurt.
It's such a great joke. I love it so much. And then like Bobby's like, okay, well, I'll help you. I'll just read it out loud to you.
He's like, what's your weight?
Wait, like, I'm like, it's all relative.
It's all relative. Depends on if I'm on the moon or not. And you know, Tony's like, hey, you're in outer space, are
I love the all the stuff between Bobby and Jim is great. The what is one of them like? Have you ever had like what, alcohol or narcotics? Like,
yeah, oh yeah, it's mental disorder,
mental illness or narcotic addiction.
Now that's a tough choice.
I think that's the best like dialogue joke.
Yeah,
you know, outside of you know, slow down. I think it's that's pretty great. It's because and it's. You know, it's a very easy joke, but it's like you want that joke. Like as the audience, you're like, he's going to say both. It's the precursor to, you know, someone filling out the form like Austin Powers and Sex. Yes, please.
Yes,
like
please,
that kind of thing.
It's so great.
But the delivery of it is pitch perfect.
I really, really like Jeff Conaway's performance in this episode. I do feel, I mean, he leaves the show after season three. He was kind of a problem towards the middle of the show, mm-hmm. and he shot himself in the foot a little bit, not literally, but like you could picture that happening. You could picture it. He bailed on a couple of episodes somewhere in like season three, I think, and they just gave all of his lines to Tony Danza, and they're like, eh, yeah, it does work. He can do it. So they like mm-hmm. didn't feel a need to accommodate him and his, you know, his drug problems and
I think
all
he wanted
that.
To do like movies and
yeah,
stuff. Like it was,
so
he was
it
kind
just
of like
didn't work.
Like, it was that role was very sort of autobiographical.
Yeah, and it really bums me out because I really do like his performance, especially like this. He's great in this episode. He's such an unlikely straight man because usually he's playing the mimbo. Like he's a pretty boy, kind of dum-dum usually, and it's fun to see him interacting with Jim. Where like Jim brings out everyone's paternal instincts, and it's like, oh, Bobby has this side. So I like that they chose, you know, Bobby got to be the slow down, like he got to be the other half of that.
Yeah, that's a good point. You would think, you know, if I were, you know, if we had notes from the writer's room to go out and alone and just write this episode, I'd give Alex that part.
Yeah, Alex or Elaine, like, you know, you could see either one of them doing that easily. Alex doesn't really do much in the test section. He just stands there, really.
Yeah, he's just kind of like, let's see how this goes.
Yeah, he tosses a line every now and then, but like it's really, you know, Bobby and Elaine and the gym show.
But yeah, just seeing Bobby, you know, embarrassed is wonderful. And so that was a really inspired choice. And you know, yeah, you think about Jeff Conaway in the series overall and just his swagger, like coming in and like fixing his hair and stuff.
Yeah.
It was sort of like, I imagine on the set of Grease that they had to tell everybody else to just sort of like up the volume a bit.
It's like, yeah, tone it down.
And then for him, tone it down a little bit. Like we're doing a heightened thing and, you know, it's you're going to break some of the rules you learned in acting class, but actually Jeff, why don't you tone it down just a little bit? Stop shaking your head so much. And
yeah. I did want to point out, like, I looked this up, like how did Christopher Lloyd not win an Emmy for this episode? He didn't, but he did win the
two
Emmy
wins
for Outstanding Supporting Actor in 82 and 83.
Okay.
So I guess it's the last two seasons of Taxi he won.
And man, this is a real great showcase episode, but he has, I mean, when we were talking about this, I said, yeah, let's do Taxi and I'd like to do a Reverend Jim episode. That was sort of my one caveat that I want. I, of course, I talk about any show you'd want, but like, or any episode of Taxi or anything.
You're coming back for Step by Step for sure.
Oh my God. Okay. But I was like, there's something about Reverend Jim that's just really special to me. And, you know, I had an uncle who was in Vietnam and did have some drug problems. He wasn't, you know, quite the burnout that Reverend Jim is. But like, there's something about that character, and it's really poignant. Also, just thinking about the writers and the director, like working on this, because they knew guys that were sort of like this. Like, yeah, he was based on real people that they had met, and maybe friends that they had before the war, and then they came back and they weren't quite the same.
Yeah.
But there's this great inherent, unassuming sweetness about Jim Ignatowski, and there are many episodes that will, you know, reduce you to tears. Like, even weird things like him bringing a horse into his apartment filled with doors, and this being his pet, or like having, you know, I think it was one of the short story episodes. They have these great anthology episodes.
Yeah, the season finale every year is an anthology.
There's the one with all the TVs. Like, Jim gets this big,
that's great,
TV thing, and they're just such a, you know, like I said before, like Latka, like a lot of people, when they think of Taxi just in general, they think of Latka and how, you know, cute he is and like the silly voice and stuff. But like we said, you know, he was more like more of an imp, like a mischievous character, whereas Jim was just pure
earnest.
Earnest. Very... And, you know, very selfless.
Yeah.
He always enjoyed giving to other people.
And they would take advantage of that.
Yeah. And I think of the one with him and Elaine and him taking apart his van.
Right.
And then making like a dollhouse for her or something, like rebuilding it in her apartment. And it's something that he's not going to be like, oh, this is such a dramatic thing that I'm doing. She's going to love me. It's just, I think Elaine will like this, so I'm going to do it.
So, like, he gets, you know, we mentioned earlier, like, he, you know, he passes with flying-ish colors. He comes back, and Alex offers to be his first fare, which, you know, you see it come on a mile away. Like, he gets in, and he immediately goes in reverse and backs up through the garage door. So, like,
did I do that? Yeah, but there's a, but the button is that'll be 90 cents.
Yeah, which is really great.
Perfect.
I also noticed that they go to slow motion for that wrecking scene. It's like slightly slower motion,
mm-hmm,
which gives it a little bit more like dramatic heft. It's an action, mm-hmm, scene. So I also have
that's a staple of that era, I think, of when, and like, even like, just reference Family Matters there for anyone who doesn't recognize what we just did. But like, when Steve would crash into something, it would always be in slow motion for the just dramatic effect.
I do have some trivia for this episode.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It is, as I always say, it's very hard to find episode by episode ratings for television pre-1988 or so. But on average, Taxi was watched by 22.4 million people in its second season.
Mm.
So 22.4 million is a ton of people. That's like more. That's like Walking Dead Monday Night Football numbers or something. Sunday Night Football. Oh. When is football? I don't know. This podcast isn't about that. The weekly ranking, I did find the weekly ranking. Three's Company was the number one show that week. It was ranked number 13 for the season, though. Taxi was right below Eight Is Enough that year.
Man.
Yeah.
But it's going to skyrocket from here, I think.
Well, it's always weird. It wasn't a big ratings hit because it did get canceled by ABC after season 4, and then NBC had to pick it up.
Right.
For season 5.
Well, is it skyrocket in Taxi terms?
Right, yeah.
But this isn't the peak of its popularity.
It did win the Best Comedy Emmy for, I think, its first 3 seasons, which is wild to think about. Like, this season is one of the best seasons according to the Emmys. Like, that's nuts and great.
Well, that's, recognition.
Right.
That's nice.
For IMDb, so the rating for this episode, 133 users rated this episode of Taxi a 9.1. Would you go higher, lower, or do you think that's right on the money?
9.1?
Yeah, for this episode.
For out of like all TV or like on the Taxi scale? I would say spot on. 9.1.
Okay.
Pretty good.
Yeah. I would go 9.1. I don't know. I would go like 9.3.
You're going that granular?
Yeah, man. This is what I do. This is what I do.
Not okay. 9.4 then.
Okay, cool. and then lastly, TV Guide ranked this episode number 63 on their list of 100 greatest episodes in 1997, and it bumped up to 51 in 2009.
I think that's too low for it.
Yeah, I do wonder. I need to get my hands on that list and maybe do... I don't know. That could be a fun, that's like a 2-year project. 100 episodes? I ain't going to do that. Jeez.
Mm.
Forget that. But yeah, I mean, I would say this is higher than 51.
Like, this isn't like tightly scripted TV, even for like sitcom standards, but just in terms of like joke for joke, heart for heart, like, I think it's really strong.
It's a. The thing that I think separates Taxi from Cheers, because I think what you said was totally accurate, and they are very, very, their DNA is so similar. It's like, I can't think of a good metaphor, so I'll just say what I mean. It's the characters are similar, but they are being filtered through a totally different plot structure. My theory is that Cheers invented the A plot, B plot, C plot sitcom structure that has become the norm for the past 30 years. Mm-hmm. Whereas Taxi is a one-act play every week. So,
yes.
Cheers feels more ensemble-y to me because no matter what episode, you're getting a little bit of everyone and they're all getting important arcs, like a big arc, a medium arc, or a small arc, but they're all getting stuff. Whereas Taxi is like passing the microphone at karaoke or whatever. You know, there's a Jim episode, there's an Elaine episode, and since it's basically a one-act play, everyone else is only in that episode as much as they, need to be.
Yeah.
Like, you'll watch and be like, oh, like, I don't think Tony was in the last episode. That just, happens because of the way it's structured.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
but,
one isn't better or worse, but...
There are definitely Alex episodes, there are Louis episodes.
Yeah.
Everybody gets their own episodes that they get to be the star, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah. But it does mean, it doesn't feel as camaraderie-y because you're not getting a lot of them in every... Like, Cheers, even if it's like a cliff episode, Carla's still doing something. Like, she's dealing with her kids being crazy or like her horrible hockey-playing husband that dies in a Zamboni accident or whatever. So Taxi feels a little bit more, I don't know, standalone-y in some ways. For me.
Okay.
And I feel that, and I guess I feel that also more because the cast changes up some too. Like, I really do kind of miss Bobby when he goes away, and I, I wish that, I wish Xena had joined the show.
Yeah.
Rhea Perlman, because she's so great in this.
Really good. Very different character than she plays on Cheers.
I wish we'd gotten a lot more Carol Kane earlier on. But I do wonder what Taxi would have felt like if they had done that A plot, B plot, C plot structure and how it would have fared.
I mean, obviously I love both shows, but I do love how grungy Taxi is, how uncoordinated and
yeah,
it doesn't,
that's true.
it's very much they introduce the A plot and then that's everyone's obsession through the entire episode. Like, Louis going on a date. And we follow him on the date, and then we see the fallout from the date. Louis goes out on a date with Nardo, and that's the whole episode, and it's about those two.
Yeah. It's also harder to, like, I've now written a couple of sitcom pilots and for myself. They are not going anywhere. Unless anyone's listening and wants to make them happen. And that seems like it's so much harder to do what they're doing. I mean, part of me wonders if the three-plot thing was invented just as a way to write episodes easier. Because if you know, like, okay, these are the, like, three things that are happening in this episode, you know, like, act one, got to hit all three of them. Act two, got it. It's kind of writes itself in a way.
I mean, and it's weird because, again, this is Glenn and Les Charles writing this particular episode. Yeah. And, I mean, you can bounce a dime off the pilot of Cheers. It's right. Like one of the perfect scripts ever. And I could talk about that one for hours. I could do the Cheers pilot minute. Podcast where you just talk or break it down by 10 seconds or something. That's a perfect, except for the lady in the wheelchair. How does she get down those stairs? Just between scenes. It's bizarre. But anyways, this is so rough and tumble and so right. The opposite of that. Like if you throw a dime at this, it's going to absorb it and it's going to spit it out somewhere else. And you're going to hear it clank on the floor, like, but you're not going to know where it is.
You'll get like
it's
a under the rat bag.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's very, very different. But like the thing that you know, links them is just like super charming characters that are not perfect. And, but we still love them. We're not told to hate them. Even Louis, like Louis is a terrible person, but like we're often reminded that he's a human being and but there's some silver lining to him. And so I'll take Taxi and Cheers over Seinfeld any day.
Whoa.
Because there is a beating heart to this. And
100%.
Seinfeld, while I loved it when it was on, I've since sort of like cooled on it because it's so cynical.
Yeah.
And this is something that's so warm, even though, and it's not glossing over anything. I mean, like we said, it's dirty, it's filthy, but it still has a heart about it. And that's why I keep coming back to these shows.
Right. This is going to be probably a no-brainer question, but, as I ask in every episode, who would you say has the must-see performance in this episode? Who's the MVP, the MSP?
Now, usually it's Jeff, the character of Jeff, and something he does in the cage, or the unseen cockroach, but it's going to go to Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, I think the more interesting is, like, who gets runner-up in this? I mean, Danny DeVito.
Danny DeVito, yeah, absolutely.
Who comes in third?
That's Jeff Conway.
Yeah, I'd say that, yeah. And then it's all kind of...
It's all tie after that,
yeah. And then lastly, is this a... must other people see this episode? Would you say this is a must-see episode of television?
Yes.
Yep. No argument from me there.
It's about as quintessential as it gets.
This is another one of, like, part of the reason I do this show is to keep beating the drum for the genius of multicam sitcoms. I mean, did you notice the laugh track at all while watching this? Like, I don't. When you watch an episode of a perfect multicam episode where, like, it's genuinely funny, you don't notice it.
Sometimes I do.
Or,
sometimes,
like, it's not bothering you. Like, it doesn't bother me.
The interesting thing with Taxi is you're listening for Jim Burrows' laugh because he has this, like this honking laugh.
Yeah.
And I actually, I looked that up one time. I was like, someone has to have written about this. Like, who is that dude who's in so many of the laugh tracks making this honking laugh? And I was like, oh, that's Jim Burrows.
So great. Yeah, it's such a perfect example of a multicam show. Because I can't imagine a single cam show being able to do, you know, a weird garage dance number and then following into the energy of that, like, DMV scene. And getting it the same way. This is why multicam shows work, is because they're partly stage play, they're partly theater, and the longer shots, the wider angles, like, that makes it feel, you know, come alive in this really unique way. And I think this episode is a perfect example of that. That DMV scene alone is a perfect example of that.
And I was about to say, like, can you imagine a show in 2017, like, just stopping to do, like, a musical number? And I'm like, actually, yeah, you can, because it's totally come around again.
Yeah.
That we're doing that, that we're a bunch of musical nerds, and
yeah.
We actually crave those. We're like, when is The Flash going to have a musical episode? You know, whatever. And sitcoms as well. But I've always loved just the earnestness about it. They're never embarrassed to do anything. They love what they love and wear their hearts on their sleeves. And that's my kind of comedy.
Ditto. So thank you so much, Paul, for coming out and
this
talking all things Taxi.
So much fun.
Where can people reach out to you if they have questions about our Reverend Jim and our Lord and Savior, Ignatowski?
Oh, and by the way, that would be my dream if someone just randomly tweeted me and was like, what do you think about, what is the second best episode? So I'm Fuzzy Typewriter, all one word, on Twitter. And that is also the name of my podcast, which you can find on iTunes. Brett came on for an episode to talk about the S-Town podcast from the makers of Serial and This American Life. And that was really great. We've got some great feedback on that. So thank you for doing that.
A lot less funny.
A lot less funny, we crack some jokes, but that was really fun. And, so usually we talk about storytellers, art, and artists. So not always funny stuff, but sometimes the big popcorn movies, sometimes more dramatic things. But, yeah, all our favorite entertainment. We love getting granular about our TV.
Yes, and that is, of course, what I love as well. And that does it for this week's episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guest Paul Montgomery for dropping by and talking about Taxi with me. Next week on the show, I will be discussing the Mary Tyler Moore Show episode Put on a Happy Face. Put on a Happy Face is in season 3. It is episode 23. And hooray, you can actually stream the Mary Tyler Moore Show on a number of platforms. So you can find Put on a Happy Face on Hulu. You can also find it on iTunes and Amazon. Until then, you can follow the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at MustHaveSeenTV. If you like what you've heard, please, please rate and review Must Have Seen TV in iTunes. I want to thank just one me for leaving a review in iTunes. I also want to apologize for being so hard on Perfect Strangers. That episode was crazy, though, so maybe I'm not apologizing. But seriously, thank you so much for taking the time to leave a review. If you want me to thank you on the podcast for leaving a review, then leave a review in iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. You can read all the words I write about TV and other things at Decider.com. You can check out my sitcom t-shirts and stickers at tpublic.com/user/Brett White. The theme song for the show is Patricia's Moving Picture by The Go Team. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to you for listening, and I'll see y'all next week on Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.